Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, do videos get better when you put music tracks on top of them? The founder and CEO of an app called Mindy is going to join us to talk a little bit more about his vision behind an app that does just that, plus a lot of other social news coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and guest host Shannon Morse, episode 180, recorded Thursday, September 18th, 2014. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane, and I am joined in person by none other than the lovely Shannon Morse.
Hello, everyone. How are you all doing today?
I will speak for everyone and say very well. Amber is, at a speaking engagement, so she said, Sarah, will you forgive me if I can't do the show? And I was like, aww. I will if Shannon could do the show.
Well, I'm happy to fill in anytime. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's always fun.
Of course. I agree. I love having you here, and it's always fun to have somebody actually sitting next to me on the Social Hour set. We are not alone, though. We are actually joined by a guest today that Amber set up. And I'm very excited to welcome him now, Grégoire Henrion, or Greg, who is the co-founder and CEO of an app, a service called Mindy, M-I-N-D-I-E. And he joins us now. Hey, Greg.
Hi. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Thanks for being on the show. I know you're based in San Francisco, but you're in New York today, so a busy day, I'm sure. But but you missed the rain. Amber and I always like to talk about the weather when we do the show, so you know there's a little bit of that. But so I guess right away, and of course I tweeted right before the show, so now I'm getting all these at replies. But right away, I guess for anybody who's not familiar with Mindy, and you've been around for a while, it's not exactly a new app. What is the video spin on this particular app? And I can kind of go through it as you explain.
Sure. So we are a mobile video sharing network, except our format is music videos. So you shoot a video, then you get it play. It plays and with music. I mean, you just have to shoot a video, then you can add any music you want, and you share it with your friends, or in public, or in your preferred social networks.
And the music is
like Twitter.
And the music is coming from your iTunes library. Can you pull it from somewhere else?
Not yet. Actually, we are based on 7 Digital. It's a provider where you get samples of 30-second samples of a lot of music, like from Rihanna to I don't know, Michael Jackson. And you just have to use this sample just to add as a soundtrack on your video.
So basically, if the sample's available in your company's database, I guess I could call it, you can pretty much use it on any video that you want.
Yeah, you can use it on any video. We are talking with already some music labels to license it, but you can use something like 25 million songs.
I was going to ask you about that. I was going to be like, how's that legal?
we want to make it square with the music industry. We are a way for them to make more viral some music. So currently we are working on it to make it 100% legal.
That's awesome.
I love the idea of this, especially because, I don't know, I guess growing up in the 80s when we were all watching MTV all day.
Music videos.
There is still something that's special about putting music over kind of anything that always makes it, I don't know, a little bit more sentimental or happy.
Memorable.
Yeah. There is an emotional thing that,
that goes on here. It was our idea that video sharing is hard. Even if you take a Vine or an Instagram, most of the time, videos are most of the time boring. But our idea that music empowers people to create a better quality content. So this is why we think the music video format can be huge because people will feel better sharing a video of quality than just sharing a video with a weird sound with nothing or something like that. So yeah, we see music like the filter. Like Instagram brought the filter to make your photo beautiful. We think music helps you to create a better video.
So where did this... I love the idea. The app is lovely. I know that you said before the show started, iOS 8 is brand new, and there are still maybe a few tweaks to work out. But you know, besides anything like that, I'm not seeing anything, and it's beautiful. What prompted this particular approach? Because as you know, obviously there are so many video apps, and everyone's kind of trying to figure that out. Video is tough because it's a commitment. You're asking somebody, oh, okay, I have to kind of stop what I'm doing, and there's audio, and I got to listen, and I got to focus, rather than a photo that you can go past a little bit more easily. Where did the inspiration come from?
Yeah, well, we see that Vine as a comedy channel, and we see us as a music channel. Like Vine will be Comedy Central, and we would be MTV. So this is how we see it. And and as I told you, we really think music can make your content way better. So we think sharing a Mindy is easier than sharing a Vine or an Instagram in a way.
This totally reminds me of being in high school and creating music videos with like Windows Movie Maker.
Yeah,
and then trying to post them on YouTube like 10 years later and getting them pulled down because I had licensed music on them. This is cool. So how do I go about just sharing this with people? Can it just be like Facebook and Twitter? Do you have social networks shareability with other platforms?
Now, currently, we have, the basic ones, like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can send it through text and through email. Currently, this is just that. And, of course, we've got the app is a social network, so you can share it in Mindy. And you get a full-screen video playing. So we are currently one of the only full-screen video app, I mean, as a social network. So we want to use the whole screen and not just a square. We want an immersive experience.
I want to ask you about... I love this. It's also... Okay, I'm having too many conversations happening right now. Everyone just decided to blow up my phone right when the show started. I want to ask you about a company like Facebook, say. Facebook pretty much... clones everything that achieves even moderate success, you know, because everybody has such short attention spans when it comes to apps. A company like Instagram, which started out very, you know, it's photos and filters, now does videos. They've got the Hyperlapse app now. They keep sort of adding features in to set them apart. When you have an app like Mindy that is really, really specific, it's like these are videos, they look a certain way, we've got the music thing, nobody else is doing that. How much do you worry that a company that has a lot of engineers and deep pockets can do this, can recreate this and have a huge user base right off the bat?
Yeah, I think you can copy the feature, but you can't copy the community and the identity. It's like a TV channel. You can't copy really the content. Every time Facebook tried to copy the others, they tried to copy the features, but not the culture. So I think we will always have our identity, and this is what makes us strong. And I don't really worry. I think we will always be unique in a way.
I just keep tapping. Just share more minis with friends. It really is a lot of fun. I guess what would you consider to be the social network you think your app, Mindy, or really anything else that you might work on in the future works best with? I mean, I noticed that I shot one just really quickly while you were talking, and you know, I could share it on Twitter or Facebook or that sort of thing. What do you feel like Mindy gets the most traction with?
Video conception. So people love watching videos. They do. They watch a lot and a lot of videos. So we now our job is to make these videos spread out on the web to make it viral. on you know website like Mashable or BuzzFeed or Twitter and anything. And we are mainly a consumption app, so people love watching videos. Mm-hmm. Currently, this is the use case for a video is still watching. It's still not behaviors are changing, but it's still mainly watching and not creating. So it's something like 1% creators for 99% watchers. This is our model.
And that's something that I know you see on Vine as well. You know, you have the Vine stars that emerge.
Yeah,
and, you know, and then
true.
It's the, you know,
same with Instagram.
Right, and YouTube stars. I mean, it's all kind of the same thing. You've got a much smaller group of sort of performers, creators, and then you've got the people who just kind of want to sit back and consume and be entertained. Why do you think that video is so hard, Greg, or time-consuming, or it doesn't... Why is that number so skewed, do you think?
I think just because people watch create a lot when they feel free and when they feel they are happy with their creation. So when you do video app, our job is... the job is to make the creator be happy with what he just created. Snapchat do something very well because you don't care about the quality. You just shoot anything and you can send it to your friend and it's ephemeral. So I think it's a good video product, Snapchat video. But after, if you want it to stay, like if you want to publish it and if you want people to watch it, you have to be very, very happy with what you're creating. That was why Instagram took off. And we tried to do exactly the same thing, but for video.
So what app is free? Obviously, it was easy to download live in the App Store. Is it iOS only? No Android
iOS
version? Because I got Shannon here, who's an Android user.
Android is coming, but it will be later, coming soon. iOS only, generally, yeah.
And this is the question that we always ask because we know that the audience wants us to. Free app, easy to use. How do you make money? What's version, you know, 5.0?
There are different possibilities. The first one, we are experimenting with it. It's not in this version, but you can buy songs from the app. Like you hear a song and you just want to say, oh, I love that song. And you want to buy it through iTunes or through Google Play or anything. So this is a way to make money. People discover a lot of music through the app. Actually, they use it as a passive discovery tool. They watch videos and they say, "Oh, that's a cool music. That's a cool song." So in a way, we can be a very good music discovery tool. Mm. And people could, you know, we can drive traffic through iTunes. And we, in a way, we can monetize with that. And also, I think in this DNA, music videos are advertising, something like that. So I really think if we create an amazing experience of video, we could introduce advertising in a very smooth way and very valuable, both for the users and for the brands. So we can see on when our user base will be big enough. So like in a few years, our model of advertising could be sponsored Mindy's of high quality, like Nike make a beautiful Mindy. People would like to watch it if it's beautiful and entertaining. People just don't like advertising when it's just aggressive. Mm-hmm. But with music, things are more beautiful, more emotional, more entertaining, and people like watching these kind of videos. So I see the music video format as a very easy way to monetize through advertising.
Last question before we let you go, Greg. Sure. And It kind of relates to the question I asked earlier about how do you compete with, you know, a company like Facebook that might want to recreate something like this. How do you, in again, a very saturated world of apps, not just for iOS, but mm-hmm. obviously the Android OS as well, and just apps in general, how do you get that user base? How do you, you know, you've got people who love the app who are using it, but that discovery part is so hard. And I feel like, because I review iOS apps for a living, I mean, there are so many apps that there's nothing wrong with. They're so cool. And you can just tell that they're not getting the kind of traction to survive. How does Mindy, you know, kind of get the word out and continue to get people excited about it?
The secret is retention. So we have to create a really, really strong emotional experience. And if you get the retention, if people keep using it, of course, you've got traditional way of sharing and traditional way of growth, like sharing on Twitter, sharing on you know, everywhere makes you grow, I mean, organically. But the most important thing is people have to keep using the product and keep enjoying it. And because they love it, they will talk about, I mean, good products are products you keep using. Most of apps you don't grow because people using one day or just one week and after they stop using it. This is why they don't grow. Good products that have, yes, a huge traction and huge growth are products you keep using every day because you love it. So we try to do everything to make our user happy. And if the product is amazing, growth will be easier. And of course, there are we can bring celebrities on the platform. Of course, we are going to be helped by, I don't know, we have just been featured by Apple. It helped us a lot in our growth. But the most important is retention and keeping the user in the loop.
Well, I love it. This is great. Mindy, by the way, what is Mindy a person? what's the name all about?
It was the mix between mainstream and indie.
Very clever. So,
that's cool.
It was related to culture and to music and to video and, you know, this indie culture, mainstream culture. And it was easy. I mean, we thought the name was simple and straightforward. And it was a good, it reflects the company, I think.
That's awesome.
You can download Mindy, of course, if you're on iOS. Mindy, MINDIE.co, Gregoire Henrion, or
yes.
Greg. Thank you so much for joining us. He is the co-founder and CEO of Mindy. Definitely, if you like music and videos, this is definitely hypnotic. I could spend quite a bit of time flipping through other people's Mindys and maybe trying to put together a few of my own as well. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you.
Well, what do you think, Shannon?
That was cool.
You know, I'm actually glad that you're an Android user because I always wonder, and I think Greg was, you know, he said Android coming soon. It doesn't sound like it's coming that soon. And that is the case with a lot of apps.
That is the case with a lot of them. They'll end up taking like a few months to a few years. And you never really know for sure because one person's idea of soon is going to be different from somebody else's.
Yeah.
For me, soon is like immediately. So I'm,
right.
I'm very impatient.
But this
is a cool app.
But with so many Android users, you know, and I don't want this to become like, you know, war of the OSs, but like with so many Android users, so many more worldwide... Mm-hmm. I wonder why it's still taking a long time for that to shift. I mean, it's still, well, for the most part, not with every app, but for the most part, it's iOS first and then Android, you know, pretty soon.
That's true. It does.
You get a lot of vague, well, we're working on it.
I think if a lot of it is just because it's so complicated to be able to build a application that's going to run on not just like the GS4, but also the Nexus 5 and the Note and the Moto X and every single different Android phone that's on the market, because there's so many. It's just a lot harder to implement your application on that many different phones and make sure it works exactly like it should on all of them as compared to just the iPhone branding, which is like, you know, however many phones that they have on the market right now. Five, six.
Now it's a lot.
Yeah.
It used to be just the one. I know. It's just kind of fascinating to me. I like Mindy a lot. In fact,
it's so cute.
I've never reviewed it for i5, which is our iPhone review show. And Amber really has a knack for discovering apps because she looks for apps as well, too, for another show that she does. She's always finding apps that I'm like, how have I not heard of this? Like, company's based in San Francisco, it's video, you know, the stars are aligned in every way, and still I can't keep up on it. But that's good, because then, you know, I always have something to do for my job. quick reminder for everybody who might not be watching us live, might be watching or listening to us on demand. If you would like to join us live, we record the show on Thursdays right after Know How and right before Coding 101, which Shannon co-hosts, by the way. So thanks for doing back-to-back shows
today.
I know you're already busy enough. Yeah, noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern time. And as I mentioned, Amber Mack is off this week, but we've got Shannon Morse here to help me get through some tips and tricks and a little bit more social news of the day. We'll start with, this is actually kind of interesting, Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, has had a couple big weeks, and gave a two-part interview to Charlie Rose. The first part aired last Friday, the second part aired, it was either Monday or Tuesday night, on PBS here in the U.S., and it was, it's a very interesting interview. He was, if anybody didn't watch it, Tim Cook is somewhat guarded as he appears, but also had a lot to say, answered a lot of questions. One of the things that I thought was interesting is that last week, and Amber and I talked about this a little bit, there was a rumor floating around that Apple was buying Path. Now, Path, Amber and I have both kind of, we've sort of abandoned it. But
me too.
Yeah.
I used it for a short time, but right. I don't have a lot of friends on it, so.
I for a while, I did. I mean, I had 150 friends.
You were like one of the only people that updated Path online.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. not all of my 150 friends were always using Path at the same time, but it was once an active place, and gradually, for reasons that have nothing to do with the app, I just kind of lost interest. Mm-hmm. But I always thought it was really nicely designed. And so we sort of thought, well, if Apple were to buy Path, you can sort of write that off as nobody uses Path. Why would Apple mm-hmm. do that? But the technology could be so great baked into something like the Messages app.
Oh, that's true.
And Apple is experimenting with making Messages more, multimedia, sending videos and audio messages and all that stuff. Tim Cook told Charlie Rose the company has no plans to be in the social networking area. Now, this is in response to asking him about, the rumors about buying Path.
Right.
So he's not saying, it's a non-denial denial.
We're not going to see Apple's version of Google Plus anytime soon.
I don't think so. I really don't. I don't think that Apple looks at Google Plus and thinks we really need to get in on this. I think having a social network that is thriving and works for most people mm-hmm. is really hard, and that's why you've got people on one hand saying Google Plus is a ghost town, and other people saying no, it isn't. I'm on it,
right.
And it's really it's a thriving community. It's like it's just hard to get everybody on the same page.
Right.
I think you have the same problem with Facebook. I'm kind of addicted to Facebook, actually. And then on the other end of it, there's people who are like, Facebook is horrible, the privacy issues, and it's,
totally horrible, but I'm addicted as well.
Yeah. So, but it's like a social network is never quite right for everybody.
Yeah.
You have all these emotions about it. And I think Apple, frankly, would prefer not to even, dip their toe in. I don't know. What do you think?
I can't imagine them ever getting into a social network either. It just seems so off from what they normally do. They work really good hardware, and they make amazing software for their hardware.
Yeah.
But otherwise, social network for everybody?
Right.
I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't either. It's whenever you talk about Apple and social, people say, remember Ping? Which is, I don't even really remember Ping, because it never really made much sense to me. It was in iTunes, and there was...
Oh, that thing.
Yeah, it was like... But I think, I feel like Apple is sort of just... They would just prefer not to even... Like, stick with what we're good at,
yeah.
Hardware, we've got new versions of our mobile OS. Let's just do that. However... It did get me thinking, the whole, idea of, would Apple buy Path, would it not? Let's just shelve that for a second. So this morning, because I upgraded to iOS 8 yesterday, and things look a little different. And, okay, so if you look at my phone now, I was all excited about my predictive text, because autocorrect is such a mess, and predictive text is a little bit different
in
iOS
8.
Yeah. But then I was like, what's this microphone type of a thing? And so it's like... Okay, cool. So now I've got this whole audio note that I can send to somebody. Now, and I'm not going to send that because it's really weird. My friend will be very confused about it. But this morning, back and forth, we were actually sending each other audio notes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really fun because this is nothing new at all. But it's like... there's everybody's in the Messages app anyway.
Yeah.
So if you build in an audio note feature, then I don't have to switch to another app just to send somebody an audio note. And then that just works better because, you know, we're all very lazy.
I like that.
But then, here was the weird thing is that I sent an audio note. We sent a few audio notes back and forth, you know, and I'm kind of looking at it and I'm laughing and I'm looking at the timestamp and then it disappears.
Wait, what?
Yes.
What do you mean it disappears? Like,
it disappears.
Forever?
Yes. I didn't realize that in my settings, audio messages and video messages, because you can also push to send a video message to a contact, by default in iOS 8, are set to expire in 2 minutes. So you can set the expiration to be longer, or you can decide to selectively save one.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that, and I was like, hey, those were good audio messages. What the heck? And so, you know, I complained about it on Twitter, and a bunch of people wrote me back and said, that's in your settings, you dummy, which I hadn't looked really yet. But
the default is 2 minutes.
The default is 2 minutes, and the default is it goes away.
Oh, well, there's going to be tons of people that are trying to figure out why their stuff is disappearing.
Totally.
The default's set to such a low amount.
Especially,
this is probably just for storage space.
Exactly. And you know, my first reaction was, what is Apple trying to be Snapchat here? And, you know, somebody was like, well, think of all the, you know, how much room that would end up taking up if that stuff didn't go away, because you're not going to want to save just every, like, hey, I'm going to be 5 minutes late.
Oh, for sure.
You know, that kind of thing.
Occasionally I'll run into the problem where I use up too much storage on Android,
mm-hmm.
because me and my brother will send messages back and forth, which are video files, and we'll just send them through the Messenger. They're hilarious video files, so sometimes I want to save them, but sometimes I'm just like, oh, this doesn't matter.
Right.
And then all my storage is gone.
Right. And that's something that I think a lot of people forget is, I mean, if the video is living in your message, I mean, that's on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's locally on your phone. So it's going to take up some space. Something to think about. I don't know. It was a funny few minutes where I was like, what is happening here in my Messages app? But then it got
now
me
you know.
Thinking, that's why something like Path would work so well, because it's like, okay, well, Messages is basically, you know, it's SMS.
Yeah.
But now it's non-SMS messages between Apple users, right? It would still be SMS between you and I if you're on Android phone. And now it's audio. And now it's video. Or you could attach, you know, a video or picture or something.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's all of a sudden becoming more complicated. So then it becomes, okay, well, what else can you throw in there? You know, a map of where you are at the moment. That'd be helpful.
Oh, that'd
you know, that's
cool.
All kind of stuff that Path does.
Yeah.
So it still gets me back to like, I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that it would be a good
curious.
Match.
It's a curious idea.
Keep going back to that. Let's move on to a little Google news. This is kind of a far-reaching story about Google 2.0. And when we say Google 2.0, it's sort of not the Google of now. Think of it as 1.0. This is a story from The Verge. Larry Page wants the Google 2.0 to be a company that builds cities and airports. And this is actually...
So we'll have Google Apocalypse or something?
Well, it's kind of like... Okay, so Google CEO Larry Page is known for...
being slightly crazy.
Yeah, and kind of like save the world stuff, right?
Oh, yeah,
you know,
he totally
self-driving
is.
Cars and go into space and they've got the Google X Labs where people are working on who knows what. But in general, it's like, let's further humanity, you know, by
oh, I love it.
Yeah.
He is so creative. I love his ideas. Who knows how many are actually going to come out in the real world, but gosh, he's so interesting.
Exactly. This is a story from The Verge, but it originally comes from The Information apparently Page started a Google 2.0 project inside the company. It's actually, you know, that's what it is, about a year ago, to look at challenges that face humanity. And then, you know, what are the ways that Google can solve some of these problems? For example, airports, model cities, again, space exploration, all of this stuff. I think it's easy to sort of dismiss this as just like, oh, these nerds, you know, they're thinking crazy. But who else is going to do it? And, well, a lot of people are going to try, but who else has the resources besides the, you know, executives at Google?
Right.
They're they actually care. They actually want to put money and time and effort and human resources into these projects.
I think it's great.
I do too.
I want to see some of these things happen. I would love to see some, you know, new airport features. Like,
what is a more efficient airport anyway? Because I know that they're not
airports
now, but I don't know how to fix it.
No, they're horribly inefficient. Renew the TSA. That's a whole another fight right there.
Yeah, right.
A whole another protest.
Yeah.
So fix the TSA. Have electronic charging features, more than just, you know, a few plugs and then a random creepy stand where you can plug in your phone and who knows what kind of information is being stolen there.
Right.
And then fix, gosh, I don't know what else. I'm sure there's plenty that could be fixed and I hope that they're thinking of it.
I do too. Yeah. Google planes. I wonder. Hmm. Interesting. Commercial jet travel.
Anything is
with
possible.
Google. It's sure. Hey, if you're, Google self-driving cars. We're it's just all right. I don't know. Are we ready for self-driving planes?
Oh well, they kind of already fly themselves.
Yeah, that's actually. Planes are sort of the first self-driving car, right? The pilots are there. They can take control, but for the most part, it's just sit back.
Put too many computer devices in an item, and there's always security issues that I could think of that might happen.
Mm-hmm.
But have a human in charge, and there's also human error. So there's a trade-off there.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, Google 2.0. We will follow that closely, see if Google Plus is a part of this in some way. I don't know. I actually got I think it was a tweet from somebody who linked us to an article about, it was a very long article from somebody who, it was in defense of Google Plus, really. It was one of these people who's like, I'm tired of people saying that Google Plus is a failure / mm-hmm. ghost town / whatever. Here are all the reasons that it isn't. And it's like those articles are a dime a dozen, and it's weird. There's something strange going on where Google Plus is, I don't know. I should ask you, how often are you using Google Plus?
I kind of forgot about it.
Okay, so you're like me. It's like there's nothing wrong with it.
The
it's
only
just,
time
I'm,
I post
I'm running
on
out
it
of hours
for-
in the day.
Like our Coding 101 community, we mm-hmm. have, you know, 1,500 people in there, and
yeah.
they post regularly, and they have really good content. So for me, it's kind of like a news source
yeah.
for certain specific items.
Right.
But otherwise, I wouldn't use it as a social network necessarily.
Right.
I just use it as a resource.
As a resource. And I think that that's common. Mm-hmm. I think that it seems to me as though Google Plus seems to work better than something like Facebook, and definitely something better than something like Twitter, for like a photography community.
Yeah.
A coding show. I know that they use it on Know How because mm-hmm. people, you know, talk about projects and give hints and, you know,
exactly.
helpful tips and that sort of thing. In some cases, you know, some of our colleagues and peers say it's, you know, it's great for sharing tech specific news.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I don't know. I ask because week after week, Amber and I kind of go, do we cover Google Plus enough or do we not? Or, you know, what's really the protocol here? And I just think it, you know, depends on what you like.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's move on to a little transportation story. This is based in San Francisco, but I think the implications are definitely wider spread. This is coming from the San Francisco Examiner, sfexaminer.com, that the taxi service in San Francisco has suffered greatly because of companies like Uber and Lyft and Sidecar that have risen to popularity. The city's transit agency, which is the cab regulator, has said that it is being impacted clearly. I think that I think I heard and I don't want to misquote the number. I heard something like in the last 6 months, Uber and Lyft, Sidecar maybe not so much because it's a smaller company, have eaten into something like 65% of, you know, what cabs would normally, you know, the supply.
That's
basically
a lot.
Of fares, yeah, mm-hmm. that used to be reserved only for cabs. Now, it's funny because, and all cities are different. San Francisco is a little bit unique because it's, you know, full of hills. So, you know, it's often just not feasible to walk, you know, so having transportation is really important. Public transportation in San Francisco is not great. Mm-hmm. Certain, you know, it covers certain areas, but it's not really like, you know, a cool subway system.
It doesn't cover everything.
Exactly.
And in some cases, you sit there waiting for an hour waiting for a bus that should have been there 45 minutes ago.
Exactly. I mean,
I'm in there.
Yeah, you know how it goes. Yeah, I'm the, you know, it's, I live it. So the idea of having public transportation is really necessary, you know, unless you want to drive your own car. And I mean, I lived in the city well before there were apps like Uber, and you know, getting a cab could be a challenge.
Yes,
you call a number. You know, you wait on the street. It's just there weren't enough for all the people who needed them. So clearly, with these transportation services, you know, the regulations aside, issues aside, do you feel at all bad for this incumbent taxi industry that's clearly suffering? I mean, what about the drivers who are like, they don't really understand, and you know, they're losing money?
In the way of empathy, I completely hurt for these guys. Mm. Like, they have families too at home, and they have to, you know, help support their families, and they need a way to do that. But at the same time, I feel like, well, yeah, there is a reason why they're not seeing as much income as they used to, and it's because of these new services that are excellent services, and they need to figure out a way to combat those services, to come back at them and say, like, hey, we can offer a better service like this. We can build our own taxi app, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, if they had a taxi app, I'd check it out. I would try it because they're cheaper. But at the same time, you have Uber, you have Lyft. I feel somewhat safer in those cars because they don't drive like nutzos. And I feel like I'm paying a little bit more money for the serviceability of getting my car there almost immediately, like within, you know, a few minutes, especially if you're downtown in San Francisco. And the prices are usually pretty good. I mean, they're not that much more expensive than just taking a taxi.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, too, is it, you know, at first, when Uber is such a different company than it was when it, you know, first launched, because it's everywhere now, and, you know, now it's got this sort of reputation as being, like, you know, they're sort of playing dirty, and, you know, they're fighting with the Lyft people, and it's all a little bit high school. But when it first launched, it was, you know, you get a black car, and you pay a premium.
Right.
It was more expensive than a cab. But you know, you had the added benefit of you know, being able to hail a taxi basically with it. I mean, it was very,
and you have a guy like
novel.
There were a few times when I did the super advanced Uber, like, black limo type thing, and they got out of the car, they opened it for you.
Oh,
it
was
like, it made you feel like a movie star.
Exactly.
So cool.
Now,
that
of course,
my friend's wedding, it was awesome. But they also have that middle ground version. I forget what it's called. You probably use it.
UberX.
Yeah, UberX. Yeah. And that one's just a little bit more than a taxi, but at the same time, you're still getting the same service from the app. So why not?
And sometimes it's less expensive than a taxi.
That's true,
So, you know, now we're getting into the point that, in fact, on Tech News Tonight yesterday, as our last story, we referenced this study that somebody had put together, that it was like, if you drive less than about 9,000 miles per year, depending on, you know, what you do and how far your commute is and all that stuff, it might just be cheaper to take Ubers everywhere.
Wow.
Now, of course, it depends on how often you need to get into a vehicle per day, you know, but if it's sort of like to and from work type of a thing.
Wow.
It was kind of fascinating. But yeah, it's, and that's, you know, urban areas are, they're different, and it's definitely a different story in suburban areas or rural areas, but in general, yeah, I think the times are changing.
Times are changing, and if taxis want to compete, they need to keep up with those times.
Exactly.
Build an app, taxis. Come on. I want to see it.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of apps, I thought we could talk about this app called Tiny.
Tiny?
You know, this is this was the app that was made by a friend of Twit, Kevin Rose, and his new company. He's back in the apps. He can't stay away.
Nope.
He just has to keep making apps, which is great. I, you know, that's, he's a...
Are you surprised?
He's a maker of apps. Yeah, but, and I talked about this on i5 this week, but I thought it's perfect for the social hour because it is inherently extremely social. And what we're looking at is a variety, a grid. These are all people that I follow. of little looping videos that people have shared. They go really quick. You can take a photo as well. I think they're mostly videos here, a combination of a bunch of them. Now, if I'm sort of like, who are all these people? You can click and hold and see, oh, that was Daniel Berker. Cool. Oh, that's iJustine. Oh, that's, you know, Frank. And, you know, from there you can like them or take your own, obviously.
Do you hear any audio?
No audio.
Interesting.
And I think part of that is because you are looking at all these little multiple videos as a grid, kind of as a...
You can't just, like, click into a video
no
and hear it. Okay.
No. Oh, I don't want to flag that.
How interesting.
Yeah. So I think if there was audio, it would just be a mess.
It'd be a huge jumble.
Yeah. I'm sure there was... They probably tried it both ways, and it was like, this is just too much. Now, I have to say that my first reaction to this is there's too much going on.
Right.
You know, like, I don't know what I'm getting out of this. And I noticed that because the videos are all so small, it's almost as if people are being a little, you know, like, crazy face, or I'm spinning, or look at me, you know, my feet are, like, there are certain things that seem to draw attention to themselves.
Right.
So you almost start changing the behavior of somebody, like the way that they're sharing videos. I don't know, maybe I'm like overthinking this, but...
Well, you've been using this though, right?
Yeah, I've been using this for a while. I like it. I do. I just wonder what we all get out of it.
Well, why couldn't I just share these videos on Instagram?
You could.
Or with Mindy.
Or with Mindy, right, and put an actual, like, cool song track over it.
Right.
Yeah, see, okay.
I don't think I would use it. I don't like the smallness of the videos.
Right,
and that
right.
There's no audio on it.
Yeah.
I like having audio on the videos that I see my friends post.
Yeah, right. There's that. There's also, you know, the smallness. That's actually a feature that the company is like, don't worry.
Oh, it's a feature.
Nobody, you know, is going to, like, save the, you know, high-res version of this because... You can't make the videos bigger. You can't save them. Oh, and I didn't mention also ephemeral, because everything is now. They disappear after 24 hours. So whatever you throw up there, it's like you don't have
it's
to
like
make
Snapchat.
It right. You don't have to make it some sort of a really creative project because
right.
It's only there for a day, even if you look stupid and nobody can save them. So yeah,
it's curious.
Is it
free?
Yes.
Okay, that's good.
It's very 100% free. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't quite know what I make of it.
I'm not sure what I would use it for.
What is the problem it's solving?
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. That's exactly what I was trying to think of.
Yeah, and I guess you could say that about a lot of things. Like, what problem is Snapchat solving? Well, it kind of does provide something that now everybody's kind of doing it, but when Snapchat came around, I think a lot of people who are, like, you know, used to sharing things with each other, and why would I want to share something with Shannon? And she sees it, and then it goes away, because we realized that so much of the stuff that we were saving was kind of useless.
Yeah.
And communication can just sort of be a one-time thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, you got it. Good. All right, it's gone. The message has been sent and received type of a thing. But with something like Tiny, okay, you're building off of that fundamental idea, but yeah, now what? What is that? You know, that it doesn't quite... I didn't actually get a message, really, from any of those people just now.
Can you share it on any networks? Or is it just within the app?
It's just within the app.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it wouldn't
work to
port over anywhere else because
the
videos are so small. I don't know, man.
I'm trying to be positive.
Right. Yeah. We would actually love. This is the times where I want to get everybody else's feedback because I can tell you what
opinion?
I think. But you know, I'm starting to feel like more and more social networks and services crop up, and I'm like the old lady on her porch, being like, I don't get it. What is this for?
Get your Snapchat off my lawn.
Yeah, this doesn't make any sense. Oh, it's actually kind of fun. Yeah, so I don't know if my first reaction even really works anymore because, you know, it's the life is changing all around me. But yes, do give us your feedback. In fact, we love hearing from you in general, whether it's about an app or a guest idea or somebody that we've had on in the past. Or an article or a network that we haven't talked about. Love to get your feedback. You can email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. That's 2626-SOCIAL. See what, that was just a little Google voice number that I got way back in the day when we started the show. You can record a video, upload it somewhere, send us the link. You can tweet at Shannon, who is Snubs on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I'm Sarah Lee, and of course, Amber Mack throughout the week. We are always pulling your ideas and your feedback between shows. And thanks in advance for everybody who gives us ideas to help make our show every week. All right, usually at the end of the show, Amber presents something to me and everybody else, and we decide if it's rad or fad. And in her absence this week, I figured we would go ahead and say, okay, so for a rad or fad, Indiegogo, which is a crowdfunding platform, mm-hmm. It's like Kickstarter, but there are different rules. Kickstarter has much more stringent rules on what can be considered a project.
Yes.
Indiegogo is...
Indiegogo allows you to... I don't know, maybe Kickstarter has changed the rules since last time I checked, but Indiegogo lets you... collect your funds even if you didn't get the
exactly.
full amount.
Right. Yes. Yeah, that... Yeah, I'm not sure if... I think Kickstarter has changed a few rules, but that's still essentially... It's all about meeting your goal.
Right.
And Indiegogo it allows, if you're looking to raise $10,000 and you raise $8,500, you can still do something with all that money that you raised.
Yes, exactly.
Indiegogo is now expanding... beyond just these crowdfunding projects into crowdfunded businesses. And by that, I mean you now will, and the company's sort of trying it out, you now have the option to have an ongoing funding project. So let's say that you've got a new video show and you need some equipment and you need to raise a certain amount of money in order to, make the show. But you kind of need ongoing money in order to keep the show going. I mean, this is, independent podcasters everywhere. I know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
With Indiegogo, this could be something where, it's more of like a reoccurring payment, which I guess puts them in the Patreon territory.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
This is very similar to Patreon, but Patreon's thing is you create several of something. So if you're a podcaster, you would create, episodes 1 through 10, and for each episode, people would donate a certain amount to you, or they would donate a certain amount per month. So what this sounds like is the campaign never ends on Indiegogo. So you don't have to donate every single month or anything. So that could be really useful for a company who's not making several of a product, but they need ongoing funds from several different people. So if someone ended up missing the campaign on Indiegogo, they can still be able to support it in the future, still via Indiegogo, and still get some special thing from it.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's what Indiegogo is calling Forever Funding, which is kind of a sweet name. I wonder, it almost reminds me of, when they have the pledge drives on public radio, and you're like, oh, it's pledge drive week where they beg people for money and, everybody just wants it to be over. But the whole point of that is like, well, we need more money because it's publicly funded. This feels just like that to me.
Yeah,
it's like public radio for projects that, are crowdfunded on the internet. And I wonder if you've got something like Forever Funding in place and you notice that you're not getting as much funding or, something like that, after a couple months, then what do? You start like pinging people and reminding them that you exist. And is there
and
some sort of
panic?
Yeah. And sort of, please don't forget about us, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I wonder how that works. So in that sense of like, is it rad or is it fad? I think it's rad. I think, giving people more options to be able to, reach their goals and their dreams with the help of others is a great thing. And sometimes projects require more of like a little bit less money over a longer period of time.
That's true.
Than just the one. But I wonder how many projects will be successful because of this option. What are your thoughts?
We'll have to see. You know, I'm sure that there's plenty of companies that will be able to take advantage of it. Maybe it wouldn't be for necessarily a physical project, but or a product that they're going to end up sending out at the end of a campaign, but maybe it could be something ongoing like a charity or something like that, where they need funds to keep on coming in, but they're not necessarily going to send you something physical for it.
Right.
I support plenty of my friends on Patreon, and they're all podcasters from all walks, different walks of the world. And I think it's great to be able to support people via crowdsourcing and crowdfunding. It's a wonderful movement, and I'm hoping to see more of it. And I think Indiegogo is doing this positively, and it's a good way to go.
And it sets them apart from Kickstarter in, you know, one more way.
That's true. It does.
And who knows? Maybe this opens up Kickstarter to say, this is actually a pretty good idea. We could have some success with this as well, which ends up giving all of us just more options to be creative people. And
it's rad.
Yeah, it's rad. Yeah. Good, good. I'm glad we both agree. I was, I didn't even really know how I felt until we started talking about it. Now I'm like, it's really rad. Okay, so good on you, Indiegogo. Two rads from us on the set of The Social Hour. Speaking of The Social Hour, we're at the end of our hour. Thanks to everybody for watching and listening. Reminder that we do record the show on Thursdays at 12 noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Amber is usually in Toronto. But today we were joined by Shannon. Thanks again for being here. And tell everybody else who might not be familiar with the other shows, and I know it's a long list. when someone says, like, quick, Shannon, what do you do?
Do you tell them? I have some interesting stuff in the works.
Oh, good.
So hopefully that'll be coming out soon, but I haven't heard the final release date yet, so good things happening.
Good.
Elsewhere, I've been working on Techzilla over at Discovery Digital, and that's a basic rounded tech show where we do a lot of questions and answering.
Yep, Patrick Norton.
Yeah, with Patrick Norton.
Yeah.
From Twitch. Yes.
Yes.
And I also do Hack 5. Lots of really cool hacks there. We've been checking out building antennas, and we've been flying drones and building really weird computer routers inside of bird houses.
Okay.
And places. It's very interesting. Yeah, very, very interesting hacks. And then I have, of course, Coding 101.
Coding 101?
Right here on Twitch.
That you host with Father Robert Ballister, you lead the community through.
We are teaching
the ins and outs of coding,
different programming languages.
Okay.
I have learned so much since we started doing that.
I have.
I love it.
And I'm just sort of sitting at my desk over there, and you guys are over there.
Just kind
of
listening.
Like, and I'm like, I feel like I'm, even without trying, it's, you know, I end up, even just jargon.
Yeah.
There are just certain terms I'm like, oh, okay. I kind of know what someone means when they're saying, you know, because I just did, you know, coding is, you got to learn it in order to understand it. Anyway, thank you so much for filling in for Amber today on The Social
thank
Hour.
You.
It was a lot
so
of fun.
So fun to be here.
Yay.
I can't wait to see Amber back next week.
Yeah, she'll be back next week. And for everybody watching live, just stay right where you are, because Shannon's just going to walk over there and she's going to start coding. It's going to be awesome. All right. For The Social Hour, thanks, everybody. We will see you next week. I'm Sarah Lane. This is Shannon Morse. And have a great weekend.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, wait.
Oh. Oh. Oh, no, that's not good.
Oh.